Hello and a very pleasant welcome to Perspectives, our program that reports the issues from the viewpoints of our correspondents. My name is Kingsley Obin Chere. In this edition, Operation Vanguard and the Galamsey Menace. Are we close to Eureka? Technology, art development, and the bomb before computer syndrome. Who comes to the aid of local innovators? And also, when Ghana was trapped in the telenovela influenza, a search for appropriate immunization. Please be our guest. Perspectives is also available as podcast on GBC Online. Just log on to gbcghana.com. And now to the stories. Daddy, I want to eat galamsey. Weird, isn't it? But that is what the media can do. Get an issue imprinted on the minds of people, and for very little ones who do not understand, it can even be interpreted as something edible. That may be funny, but it shows the role that the media has played in getting the galamsey issue to the forefront for continuous action. As the time draws closer for the declared six-month moratorium to end, many licensed small-scale miners are looking forward to get back to work. However, they cannot shout Eureka yet because there are some issues left to be ironed out. This is being catered for by the Multilateral Mining Integrated Project. What has been happening with this project? Correspondent Joyce Jechi has been participating in its training program and has more on this after 400 soldiers and policemen were deployed to three core regions noted for the illegal mining menace. What further will Operation Vanguard achieve in the fight against galamsey?
Dubbed Operation Vanguard, the task force stationed in Ashanti, Eastern and Western regions will stay at the assigned posts until all forms of galamsey are stopped and unauthorized mining pits permanently destroyed. The men have been trained, equipped and supplied with logistics to enable them to perform the operations with precision. I once heard a toddler crying to his father that he wanted to eat galamsey. This is because of the continuous education mounted by the media against the menace. I now believe that every adult in this country might have heard about galamsey one way or the other. The illegality is not only perpetrated by the artisanal miners, but also some small-scale miners who have license to operate. Most of these illegal activities were taking place within water bodies, hence leading to the national campaign against galamsey. Apart from that, mercury, the chemical used in separating gold from ore, is being misused by most of them, leading to contamination of water aquifers and crops. This has serious health implications on the miners due to excessive exposure of inhaling the chemical. In the food chain, it causes kidney and lung cancers, among other diseases. Apart from that, large tracts of land with cash crops are destroyed all in search for gold. This will lead to low crop production, destruction of forests that serve as carbon sink, loss of biological diversity, and ultimately contributing to climate change. This is not all. School dropout is on the increase in galamsey-rife communities. This is at a time when education is one of the pillars of sustainable development. Though it is on record that the small-scale mining sector contributes substantially to the GDP than the big mining companies, the current destruction of natural resources far outweighs the benefits. It is to address the looming danger ahead that a moratorium is in place, starting from April 1st this year, to temporarily suspend artisanal and small-scale mining operations for 6 months, to promote sustainable development and the security threat due to arms in the hands of these illegal miners. The government had no option but to address the issue head-on. Going forward, a Multilateral Mining Integrated Project, MMIP, has been launched. The project hinges on 5 components: revision and enforcement of legal and regulatory regime in the sector, implementing social interventions, adapting technology to enforce efficient mining, and capacity building for stakeholders. I am a beneficiary of the ongoing capacity building for media practitioners. During the training, about 60 small-scale miners were also trained on sustainable mining. I realized that the training wasn't new to them because the University of Mines and Technology at Takwa has been offering such training for them continuously. The question is, why are they not implementing or practicing what they are taught? the answer is not far-fetched. They were concerned about seeing an end to the temporary ban, but it seemed that will not happen in the next 2 months. The chairperson of the Interministerial Committee Against Galamsey, Professor Kwabena Frimpong-Boateng, says until the sector is sanitized, as pertaining in the MMIP, the temporary ban will persist. It is for this reason that the Operation Vanguard has been deployed to clamp down on Galamsey. To the small-scale miners, a similar task force by the previous government failed, with some of them indulging in the illegality. Some leadership of the Small Scale Miners Association claim the allocation of mining sites was also done by the previous government, but politicians ended up taking over the sites and are therefore skeptical about them being beneficiaries this time. But with the mandate given the task force and Ghanaians watching, supporting the group by allaying the fears of communities is what is needed. Members of the Small Scale Miners Association have an avenue to report any illegality perpetrated by the task force. Since the media coalition against Galamsey is behind the sustained campaign, any unwanted behavior of Operation Vanguard can also be channeled to the coalition. The coalition is not the cause of the woes of the small-scale miners as perceived by a section of them, but the national interest is the ultimate goal. To men of Operation Vanguard, may they be guided by their mandate. And to those who plan to resist men of the Operation Vanguard, they have been trained to defend themselves and have the backing of most Ghanaians.
Joyce Jechi. At a point in time, the mention of windows and doors takes one to a house and you have to think of hinges and nails. Little did people know that it will become an avenue into a different world altogether. Just when the mouse moved out of the family of rodents and got a pad that was well catered for, it was clear that the world has moved on. However, the joke is always made that even though technology is leading nations into advancement, there is a segment of the populace that have sworn to remain stuck to their born before computer or BBC era. The closest they come to joining the bandwagon is to use WhatsApp or limited Facebook. Yet, a nation's development is hinged on how technology is effectively incorporated into the way of doing things. Some in the developing world have not taken advantage of this era because they have not adequately invested into the sector. The disadvantages in not investing is always there to see as we marvel at what others are able to do. However, correspondent Andrew Blay believes that there are a number of inventions from our local universities that is not being given the relevant attention. What happens to these inventions and those innovators? Are we not throwing away our potential? What are our governments doing to help? Andrew digs deeper into the issue of local technologies and the attention that they deserve in our effort to develop.
Current trends of development indicate that technology is shaping the future and its essence in our daily lives cannot be overemphasized. Technology does not only make work easier and faster, but also solves the numerous socioeconomic challenges we face. Investment in the sector is undoubtedly the best profit-making venture. Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, Sundar Pichai, Jeff Bezos, among other financial breakthroughs, wouldn't have been possible without technology. The current fate of countries like China, Dubai, Japan, among others, where our big wheels often spend whopping sums of money to enjoy their holidays, is the acid test of this. It is no longer rocket science to appreciate the fact that we are in Sputnik moment and the only well-oiled machine to salvage the situation is technology. It is indeed the magic wand. Sadly, parents, educationists, and policymakers do not give adequate attention to technology. I vividly remember back at school how our ICT lecturer hurriedly read the ICT lecture notes and practical work like storybooks to us. I recall how we queued to access the only 4 desktop computers which worked out of the then 30 in the lab. My goodness. I am not surprised that most of my coursemates were denied the ability to use basic and important computer programs like Microsoft Word, PowerPoint, Excel, among others, which are of high demand in the job market today. What you learn is indeed what you die with. It is hackneyed to say that the future of the country depends on the form of education given to its youth today. Africa, and for that matter, Ghana, has from colonial era till date become a dumping site for the developed countries where old and life-threatening machines are disposed of. Third-class and low-quality goods are also shipped to us to kill our innovation and ingenuity. The continent is merely reduced to the status of a laboratory where new inventions are tested and we never set our eyes on the upgraded and quality products. I can confidently say with much certainty that a high rate of accident and fire outbreaks of late are the result of the importation of low-standard electrical gadgets. It is worrying to see our businessmen invest their wealth in the importation of such goods and make catchy and deceptive adverts on them just to induce us to buy and kill us while turning their backs on local inventors and products. The earlier we come to terms with the fact, the better. The surest way to save ourselves from being beggars, hewers of wood and drawers of water, and from saving our youth from working under harsh conditions and inhumane treatment in foreign lands is to support our local inventors and scientists. A section of Ghanaians ignorantly claim that our local universities have nothing to offer as far as technology is concerned. On the contrary, as a KNUST alumnus, I witness on countless occasions the inventions displayed by most of the students during the annual Track Tech Festival organized by the school. I watch with mixed feeling how a student demonstrated his successful project on a self-driven train which automatically stopped and moved at bus terminals. Again, I saw how the school successfully made a solar-powered vehicle. KNUST can also boast of other equipment like cassava harvesters and multi-purpose drones, among others. University of Ghana invented breast lump detection device few years back. Students from the Accra Technical University recently showcased a number of projects as well. This range from early flood detection application, early detector application with the ability to automatically open doors for occupants to flee from impending danger, among other amazing and important inventions. The Department of Chemical Pathology of the University of Cape Coast also invented a device called Breast Eye, which is used to detect early suspicion of breast cancer. The list is endless. You see, I have a firm leg to stand on in my claim that we can do better in terms of technology if adequate attention is given to the sector. I ask, where are all these machines? How many of them are on the market? And how many are exported so far? We hear, but hardly see such inventions in the country. It is sad to say that all these important inventions end up on shelves and their inventors, in most cases, brainwashed and taken abroad. Those who stay back home die with frustration due to unfulfilled dreams. Anytime technology in Ghana is mentioned, the name of Apostle Kwadwo Safo Kantanka features prominently, the man who is often described by his admirers as the Star of Africa. This man has been manufacturing one important machine to the other with the potential to solve most of our challenges. Although his manufacturing cannot wholly be described as inventions, donned with bells and whistles which are absent in similar machines, one can imagine how much foreign exchange the country could earn in case just 100 of the Kantanka automobiles are exported within a month. In spite of the fact that everybody loves him for his technology, Apostle Kantanka only receives lip service from successive governments and investors. This leaves more than a sour taste in the mouth of many Ghanaians. Well, maybe this government is too young to be judged in terms of its efforts at promoting Ghanaian technology and ingenuity. Although we do not praise or blame the mouse when the night is too young, the earlier government pays attention to local technology and inventions, the better. A lot is expected of them, especially with the creation of the Ministry of Environment, Science and Technology. Both the Asantehene and Ochenhene need to be lauded for purchasing one each of the Kantanka automobile to promote its patronage in the country. Although a section of Ghanaians have the erroneous notion that they are low standards, I believe by continuous attempts, the monkey learns to jump from the tree. You may not have heard of Akio Morita before, but you have undoubtedly heard of his company, Sony. Sony's first product was a rice cooker which couldn't cook rice as much as expected. The company sold less than 100 units during its first year of operation. Adequate financial support from partners, commitment, and local patronage put Sony on its feet, making it grow into a multi-billion dollar company, with most of its products flooding the world market, including Ghana. My basic knowledge in economics tells me that increase in demand of a good leads to increase in its supply. Government and private investors should support local inventors, scientists and researchers and beef up efforts to grant them patent rights when necessary. I strongly believe that we can do the trick through adequate investment in indigenous technology. This, in my view, is the surest way of connecting the dots of the missing link in the developmental agenda.
Andrew Blay filed that report. You are listening to Perspectives, our program that reports the issues from the viewpoints of our correspondents. We are also available as podcasts on GBC Online. By logging on to gbcghana.com and getting to podcast, you can have access to the programs. And now to our next story. It is more than two decades ago on the campus of the University of Ghana where it became clear that telenovelas can be addictive. Ghana Television reigned supreme as the only TV station, and they had a Brazilian soap called Isora. Many students across the spectrum have to make room for Isora, and jokingly, it was given a course code Isora 400 by some colleagues. Before then, a local production entitled Ultimate Paradise has arrested the attention of so many others. Fast forward, private commercial television stations joined the fray, and the sluice gates were opened for all manner of soap operas and telenovelas. Sunset Beach, Acapulco Bay, Quando Se Asmia and others quickly made their entry, and there were times when people had to change their sleeping places in order to escape power curtailment so that they can watch telenovelas. Now, it has taken a different turn with translations into local languages, and for some households, everything grinds to a halt during such shows. Correspondent Alfred Hughes is worried about the ramifications of the present trend. If for nothing at all, it is throwing some Ghanaian actors out of work. Can something really be done? And what and when should that be? Alfred traces his way back to some history as he delves into the telenovela influenza.
The movie industry in Ghana constitutes a very critical sector of entertainment business in the country. Its evolution dates back to the post-colonial era, where movies were screened from the huge projectors at very large cinema halls across the length and breadth of big cities and towns. Names of such big cinema halls which immediately come into mind are Orion, Rex, Palladium and Regal, all in Accra. Zenith, Princess and Prempeh in the oil city of Sekene Takoradi, where I grew up. Some of the popular films which topped the charts in those days, I remember, were the Chinese films with film stars or blow men like the Bruce Lees, Ching Quan Tais, Tin Longs and Jackie Changs. Then we had the famous Indian and cowboys films of the Jack Londons and Penal Roberts. There were also the Indian films with its elegant songs, which left one spellbound and left nostalgic memories on our minds. As young as we were, and in our immaturity, innocence and ignorance, we were attracted to those films. The Jacks, Blue Men and Toffs, depending on which geographical area you grew up, were the names referred to the
protagonists
as well as the antagonists. In these films, we did not, however, give a hoot to the kind of impact these films had on the psychological and physical growth of the youth who consumed such materials. At that time, the cinematography department of the Ministry of Information were up and doing, and not everything and anything was allowed to hit our screens at such cinema halls. They properly scrutinized them before they received legal assent to be aired for public viewing. That was then, but that is not the case today. With the promulgation of the 1992 Constitution and its subsequent liberalization of the airwaves, the media landscape had not only become vibrant and robust, but very complicated in technology and complex in its regulations and licensing regimes. Over the past two decades, several electronic media, foremost amongst them, commercial television stations, have sprung up like carrots at every nook and cranny of our dear country. The exercise of the media rights and responsibilities, which come as a matter of human rights, have not been strictly adhered to. There has been so much indiscipline in the media space as rules, guidelines and regulations and the media industry have been violated with impunity. In recent times, the country has witnessed a massive invasion of foreign firms, largely from the South American countries of Mexico, Uruguay, and Brazil. These telenovelas have not only led to a gradual collapse of the film industry of our country, but have equally succeeded in contributing, ironically, to the development of the film industries of the countries which are subject of this discussion. It is estimated that every foreign movie we view, according to conservative estimates, yields a dollar for the country in concern. Today, as we speak, the Ghana films industry is but a shadow of its former self. Highly professional artists produced by the School of Performing Arts have either diverted their career progression or found other professions different from what they had sworn to pursue. The Fred Amugis, Oscar Provençals of Inspector Bediaku fame, Edna Matachi, etc., etc., are now working as restaurant proprietors or in the civil service or the public relations offices in other institutions other than the performing arts. The paradox is that a few aggressive ones have persevered and joined what is affectionately called Nollywood or the Nigerian film industry, or chosen to eat humble pie by joining the then less fancied local movies, also known as Kumawood. Today, what we witness on our television screens, we are bombarded by an endless series of telenovelas, 24 hours a day, 7 days in a week. The latest development to this new trend is when the Portuguese language in original forms is translated into the local dialect by some self-imposed dramatists. This development has naturally and automatically increased the viewership or patronage of such films. The time the films are shown also raises so much concern. Not too long ago, I was taking a stroll in my neighborhood at Dansuman, a suburb of Accra. I thought I saw from a distance of about 150 meters, a crowd converge somewhere at the middle of the street. My curiosity was immediately aroused, so I increased my pace with a view of satisfying my curiosity to what might probably have happened. As I inched closer, and to my chagrin and dismay, I witnessed three pockets of crowds, each respectably distanced from each other, and each group averaging about 17 people of different age groups and gender, glued to a 14-inch color television. The program being aired by one popular private television station was Kunkun Bajia. The excitement and passion which episodes and scenes from these films evoked from these spectators or television audience provoked a lot of questions within me. Foremost of these were whether the times allotted for the screening of such films were conducive and convenient for school-going children. A few days afterwards, I encountered two school children one early morning in a heated debate about the level of stupidity displayed by one of the principal characters in the film. I was surprised because my expectation was to see the little boys either reciting any of the arithmetic times table or any of the favorite nursery rhymes which as a toddler I had learned in my primary school days at Chapel Preparatory School in Takoradi, either black, black, black sheep or old Roger is dead and gone to his grave. No, it was not to be the case. Their minds were saturated with Kunkun Bajia. What I have chosen to do in this piece is not to be so pretentious as to pass judgment on one television station in respect to the moral or ethical content of their programs, or to even attempt to pass legal judgment in an area I know next to nothing about. My objective is playing the role as a gatekeeper or the watchdog role with regards to what we consume as a people, a nation, and as a country, and its concomitant impact on the general social and psychological makeup of the being. It is to raise the relevant questions and to expose the issues, concerns, and problems of the voiceless in order to provoke attention from public officials to act in very responsible ways. Recently, it took the patriotism of two veteran journalists to expose a couple of television stations which were screening pornographic materials at unholy hours of the night for the consumption of the general public. So where was the National Media Commission's monitoring machinery then? The question is, if these two journalists have not hinted or blown the whistle, what would have been the state of such programs? Today, the stations in question have put a stop at airing such materials. The media is to shape and direct the minds and conscience of society, and be a check on public officers to be seen as doing the right things. Information, education, and entertainment are natural cravings of society, and as a matter of fact, should be provided in a very responsible and professional manner. It is, however, my view that our film industry is saturated with so much foreign films, threatening our local film industry into extinction. If this explosion is not checked, the fear of exacerbating an already bad situation could be stretched or extended to a state where there will be no salvation or redemption to our cherished film industry. For Perspectives, I am Alfred Hughes, reporting here in Accra.
And with that, we end the program for today. We do appreciate all your calls and comments that you make. At the appropriate time, some of the requests that you place will be coming your way. But for those who do not have and want to send in their comments or make other inquiries, you can always send it by text to 0244-538-168. 0244-538-168. Alternatively, you can link up on Twitter at KObinchere, at KObinchere. And if you want to send a mail, it is tkok212@gmail.com. tkok212@gmail.com. As mentioned earlier, you can access the program on GBC Online. Log on to gbcghana.com and go to podcast, and you can have the program. Thanks for being part of it. On behalf of Joyce Jechi, I am Kingsley Obinchere saying, please keep the peace and be our guest same time next week.